You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody, I'm Justin McGuire, and this is Locked On Orioles, your place for Orioles news and analysis from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. A little later on, we're going to be joined by Andrew Stetka. He's a writer for Utah Street Report and MassinSports.com. He and I are going to talk about whether the Orioles made a mistake by moving Manny Machado to shortstop and Tim Beckham to third base. We'll get to that in just a little bit. Well, I think it's safe to say that the good feelings of the Yankees series faded pretty quickly. The Orioles have now lost two games in a row against the Blue Jays in frustrating fashion. In both games, the Orioles got strong starting pitching efforts from Dylan Bundy and Andrew Cashner. Unfortunately, the offense has been completely dormant. They scored a grand total of two runs through the first two games of the series. The Orioles are now 1-7 on the season against teams other than the Yankees. They're also 1-7 in games decided in nine innings. They're 1-4 at home. They also find themselves far behind in the American League East, where the Red Sox apparently are never going to lose again. So yeah, things aren't looking great right now. The key for this team is they're going to have to find a way to have a good pitching performance and a good hitting performance on the same night, and they're going to have to get better performances out of the bullpen than they've gotten in this series. All of this raises questions, of course, about what this team is going to do if they fall out of contention. Are they going to trade Manny Machado and others at the deadline? Is Buck Showalter's job safe? Is Dan Duquette's job safe? All these things are things they're going to have to figure out if they keep playing this badly. So it's not really a fun time right now to be an Orioles fan. There's a lot of baseball left to be played, though, and there are some positive signs. Alex Cobb's going to be joining the rotation soon. We may have Zach Britton back by May. Mark Trumbo will be back at some point. And the schedule certainly gets a little bit easier once they get past April. Well, we'll have to see what happens, but as I said, things don't look great at the moment. And we may be in the midst of seeing the Orioles rebuild start even earlier than any of us thought. Just a reminder to everybody that you can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play, and on Stitcher, so please subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review. Send us emails, lockedonorioles@gmail.com. You can suggest topics, guests, that sort of thing. And if you're interested in advertising, that's also the place to let us know. Also, follow us on Twitter, @LockedOnOrioles. Hey folks, just a reminder, for all the original content of the Locked On Podcast Network, both the podcasts and the written content on every team, go to LockedOnSports.com. And of course, for all your content on the Baltimore Orioles, make sure to go to LockedOnOrioles.com. Hey everybody, welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We're joined now by Andrew Stetka. He is a blogger for Utah Street Report and also for MassinSports.com. And Andrew, I wanted to ask you about something you wrote this week for the Massin site. You wrote about Manny Machado, and this is an issue that I've been thinking about a lot, and I think a lot of fans have. As we all know, Machado was moved over to shortstop this year. This is something the Orioles announced was going to happen back in like December or January, I think. And as a result of that, they've moved Tim Beckham, who has been a shortstop his whole career, over to third base. So you wrote about that. Just tell us, what were your thoughts on that? Because I think you and I are kind of in the same place on this. Tell us about what the article said, first of all.
Yeah, they announced back at FanFest, actually, in late January that they were making this move. And as I wrote in the piece, it wasn't really anything that was that surprising to me. You know, Machado has expressed a desire to move back to shortstop from third base for a while now. And I think he probably saw an opportunity toward the end of last year when J.J. Hardy was hurt and he was playing over there, and probably even saw more of an opportunity when he realized that J.J. Hardy wasn't going to be back with the club this year. But when the Orioles acquired Tim Beckham, maybe he saw that window closing once again. So when the move was made and the announcement was made back in January, it wasn't something that really surprised me. It was something that Machado, I think, was pushing for. And my angle on it was, I get that. I get why he would want to do that. It can benefit him both, you know, from a player profile standpoint and, let's be frank about it, financially, because he is, of course, in his free agent season. And he is pretty much, in the eyes of many, trade bait out there for a lot of teams if the Orioles do end up deciding to move him at some point before the July deadline. So that's something that can increase his value on a number of fronts. So there's definitely motivation for him to want to move over there. Now, he said that this is not a financially driven move. He said that this is just where his heart is. His heart is in playing at shortstop rather than at third base. But I guess my angle on the piece that I wrote at MassinSports.com was more, from the Orioles' perspective, why? Why would they move him over there? It's a puzzling move. I guess the only real inspiration would be to increase his potential trade value. But at this point, I don't see that the Orioles are going to move on from Machado. I don't see them trading him unless the wheels really come off on this season, unless they are really well out of a playoff chase come July. And who knows if or when that'll happen. But, you know, from the Orioles' perspective, that's the only inspiration to do it. From what we've seen, and it is a small sample size, but from what we've seen over the first few weeks of the season, it's a move that both moving Machado too short and, as you mentioned, moving Tim Beckham over to third base has looked uncomfortable. Something just has seemed off about it in the early going.
Yeah, and it seems to me the problem here is that they've essentially made themselves worse defensively at both positions. I mean, because I think Machado ultimately may end up being a better defensive shortstop than Tim Beckham, but he's not right now, I don't think.
Right.
He doesn't have the experience that Beckham had and the familiarity and comfort level. And certainly Beckham is never going to be the third baseman Manny Machado was. So it seems like, yeah, that instead of solving a problem, you've created two new ones or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's the argument that a lot of people make, is that Machado is probably the best third baseman on the team, but he's also the best shortstop on the team. But when you've got Tim Beckham, who is a fairly adequate shortstop, I don't think anyone's going to call him a Gold Glover over there, but you're also not going to say that he's, you know, super below average. And you move him out of position to third, where, you know, he's played very, very few innings in his career. I pointed it out in the piece. You know, he hasn't played enough over there at the major league level. There's a big difference in getting innings in the minor leagues and getting innings in the major leagues. And while Machado came up as a shortstop in the minors, he's played the majority of his major league career at third. And the same goes for Tim Beckham. He's played the majority of his major league career at short. So to flip those two, even though Machado may be able to handle both, if Beckham can't handle both, there isn't, you know, there's no yin and yang there. It doesn't really mesh.
Yeah, and like you point out in the article, and like you said earlier in this conversation, they just, both of them look kind of uncomfortable out there. And, you know, that's the eyeball test. You know, you don't want to put too much into it. But, yeah, certainly as I've watched them, I mean, Machado certainly doesn't seem as comfortable at short as he did at third. And certainly you're not getting those spectacular plays from Beckham at third that you're used to getting from Machado. And, you know, and over time, you know, they'll both get more comfortable with their positions. And, you know, by the middle of the season, maybe we're not even having this conversation. But one of the things that I'm thinking about is, you know, I have said on this podcast many times, I don't have a lot of confidence that this is a playoff team. But if they're going to be a playoff team, what we're looking at is competing probably for the second wild card, right? So we're looking at a team that has very little margin for error if they expect to compete. They're probably going to need to win every game they can possibly win. And if you're hurting yourself defensively early in the season, even if it kind of ends up evening out at the end of the, you know, by the middle of the season, you know, if you're costing yourself a run here and there, that could add up to a game or two in the course of the, you know, first half of the season. And that's, I don't know why you're taking the chance on doing that if you feel like you're, you know, you're going to compete for that second wild card.
And the perfect example came, and again, this is all short sample size, very small sample size, but the perfect example came in this past Sunday's game in New York. There was a play in the fifth inning where the Orioles had two outs and a ball got hit to Machado, and something about the internal clock just seemed off. He took an extra step before making the strong throw, and nobody's arguing he has the arm to play shortstop, but again, something seemed off with the shortstop clock. Everybody talks about that clock, that, you know, you've got to have the timing down. And it was a bang bang play at first base. The runner was initially called out. After review, he was safe. Very next hitter drives in a run. So it was a play that should have ended the inning. Instead, the Yankees were able to increase their lead from one run to two runs midway through the game. Now, in the end, it turned out the Orioles were able to come back offensively in that game and win it. But that may not happen at all. And that one run, as you mentioned, can end up being the difference here and there between a win and a loss in certain games. So that those are important types of plays. And that's just one example of what we've seen over these first few weeks of the plays that don't quite seem to be, you know, as fluent as they could be. And it doesn't all seem to be meshing. And we've seen the same with Beckham over at third. There's been instances where a couple games ago, he had a play at the plate and decided, you know, just seemed to hesitate for a moment, didn't make it, ended up making the play at first instead, and it cost the Orioles a run there. So there are these instances that will pop up throughout the season if all of this doesn't mesh and if these guys aren't super comfortable where they're playing. And again, all of this goes back to me questioning exactly what the Orioles' motivation is to do this. If they are going to be playing this season with the thinnest of margins for error, like we discussed, why would they create more of a margin for error, you know, or less of a margin for error by doing this, by switching these guys up and having them play in positions that they're normally, you know, not as comfortable with?
Another issue with this is something that I think it's kind of an ongoing problem with the Orioles, and that's the kind of the lack of long-term thinking. And by that, I mean, what's the plan with Tim Beckham next year? I mean, we all agree that there's virtually no chance Manny Machado is going to be back in Orioles uniform in 2019 and beyond. So is the idea that he's, you know, I mean, I would think that then Beckham probably just goes back to short, right? I mean, they don't really have somebody, they don't have a top prospect they're going to plug in there. They're probably not going to go to the free agent market. But it seems like the plan would probably be just to put Beckham back there and figure out something at third. I just don't know that it makes any sense long term to have him there. So what do you think they're thinking in terms of Beckham's future with the team?
Yeah, I mean, it would make sense to appease Manny Machado if you thought he was going to be around long term. Now the Orioles, you know, haven't indicated that they don't want Manny Machado back, but we, as you said, we all know that the chances of that are slim and none. And the Beckham story will continue to kind of crop up as, well, what's next? And like you said, this kind of goes to an overarching theme with this team as what's next. I mean, this is a team that, as we know, entered this season with their general manager and their manager on expiring contracts. They've got players other than Manny Machado, players like Adam Jones, important parts of this roster that are entering the season on expiring contracts. So I don't think anybody really knows what the future holds for Tim Beckham, much less the rest of this team and front office, and the way it's constructed is very much 2018 focused. There's not a lot of, you know, there's not a whole lot of vision beyond. I mean, I guess they did address some of that with the rotation and acquiring Andrew Cashner and Alex Cobb and setting themselves up to have Dylan Bundy and Kevin Gausman hopefully be a part of this rotation going forward. But that's about the only part of this roster that we really know long term, at least over the next few seasons, where the pieces fit. Other than that, there's not a lot of answers, and that's especially the case with Tim Beckham. If you're going to move him to third base for a season and then move him back to short, well, what was really the point of it? Was it just to appease Manny Machado? And is that really the best decision to make when you don't think he's going to be back with the club?
Yeah, and I think you have to go back to the thing you said earlier, which is if you see an advantage to it for the Orioles, the one thing you could maybe make the argument for would be trade value at the deadline. But right. As you said, and as, you know, several guests on this podcast have said over the course of the last month or so, the Orioles don't seem like they're really in you know, any mood to trade Manny Machado at the deadline. I think even if they're, like, you know, well out of it, I'm not sure I see it happening. I just don't know why. I just feel like they're not.
No, I mean, the only people I've heard from that think that they will trade Manny Machado are some of these national pundits, you know, ESPN and Fox Sports folks who just see it as the logical move. But everyone I've talked to, you know, whether it be fans or whether it be other folks who really follow this team and really pay attention, don't think that that's going to happen. And I don't either. I've said that from jump. I thought there was a really good chance they were going to trade him earlier in the winter, when a lot of rumors were percolating and there was a lot of talk about it. I really did think that they were going to move on from him, but they didn't. And then they went and signed a couple of pitchers and seemed to push their chips into the middle of the table and say, we're going all in on 2018. We really want to win this year. And if they're doing that, trading Manny Machado midway through the season would seem to contradict those prior moves. So it doesn't seem like something they're going to do. It doesn't seem like something they're thinking about right now. I'm sure that, you know, come early to mid-July, we'll hear a lot about speculation, and that's no matter where the Orioles are in the standings. But I just don't see it happening. I don't see that based on what they've previously done over the last few months, that doesn't seem to set up for a trade of Manny Machado going forward.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. Like I said, the only way I think it even becomes an option for them is if they're just so far out of it that they can't pretend that they're contenders because
I mean, if they win 15 games between now and the deadline, then sure. But otherwise, they're not going to be so far out of it that they won't be at least within striking distance of seeing the wild card spot.
Right, and that's one of the things I hate about that second wild card is it creates this, I think, a false sense of contention for some teams. And the Orioles have sort of been the kings of that in certain years. Last year, I think, is a good example when, you know, theoretically they look like they were, you know, just only a few games out or whatever. But realistically, I think anybody who was really paying attention to the team didn't really see it as a playoff team. And maybe that's the situation they're going to find themselves in again this year. All right, well, shifting gears for a minute off of Manny Machado, I just wanted to ask you about something else real quick. On Monday night, the Orioles had their lowest attendance ever for a regular game. We know about the game in 2015 when there were no fans there because of the unrest in Baltimore at the time. And look, I'm not somebody, I don't live in Baltimore. I know you don't live in the area. I certainly wasn't at the game, and I'm not somebody who really likes to go to April games when it's 30 degrees outside. So I'm not going to shame anybody who didn't go to it, but I'm wondering if there are concerns just about the long-term viability of this team, because attendance does seem to be an issue year after year.
I don't think there are, because of what you just said. Attendance is an issue year after year, and interest in the team is different than attendance at the ballpark. You know, we've seen over the years that Masson's ratings have skyrocketed. They've been able to pull in viewers. People are paying attention to the Orioles, at least within the Orioles fan community and within Baltimore. People are paying attention and talking about the Orioles more than ever, at least more than they have in the last maybe 15 to 20 years, since the days of perhaps Cal Ripken. People are interested in what they're doing, and I think a lot of that is driven by the successes that they've had over the past half decade. The fact that people aren't showing up to an early April game on a Monday night against the Blue Jays when it's 40 degrees out and spitting rain, it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't shock me. It doesn't disappoint me. It's kind of one of those things that I would have expected. I can't say that I would have been going out to sit in the stands in that weather and watch a game, especially when the option for me would be to be at home and on my couch and being able to watch it in that kind of comfort. As you mentioned, I'm out of town. I live in Arizona, and I have the opportunity all the time to go down to Arizona Diamondbacks games if I want to. And that's, you know, as you know, Arizona's warm weather, and the Diamondbacks even have a roof that they can put over that stadium. And I don't go down there very often because why would I? I can watch the game in the comfort of my home whenever I want to, rather than getting in my car, driving 30 minutes into the city, finding parking, paying for parking, paying for the ticket, paying for concessions, driving back late at night. There's a lot involved with going to a game for folks. So it doesn't surprise me that attendance would be down and would be super low for, especially when you mix together the scenarios of, like you said, a Monday night when the weather's bad. And let's be honest, they were playing the Blue Jays. that's not a big draw opponent. If they were playing the Yankees or the Red Sox or maybe the Astros, maybe attendance would have been a little higher, even in all those other scenarios on a Monday night when the weather is bad and it's cold. But I think attendance is going to perk up as the season goes along, as the summer rolls along, as the weather warms up, as kids get out of school. I think the Orioles are doing everything they can to help draw in fans, especially with the Kids Cheer Free program that they announced. They're going to try to get butts in the seats, but it's just going to take a little time, you know, especially if weather doesn't cooperate and if the opponent doesn't cooperate.
I'm not somebody who attendance shames because I don't get a chance to attend that many games myself. So I'm certainly not going to judge other people. I will say for the record, I was at a game Monday night and it was about 40 some degrees, but it was my son's Pony League game. So I had no choice. I had no choice but to be at that one. So
yeah, exactly.
And it was
a little different level of support there too.
There's about the same number of fans, I think. but it was cold. It was, and it was unpleasant. And you know, the whole time I spent like getting up and walking around trying to just get my, you know, blood circulating. So yeah, it's no fun.
How much was the ticket you paid for that game? And how much were the concessions? And how much was the parking? I mean, all of those.
Yeah,
things,
exactly. Yeah, exactly.
You know, are a factor. So.
Yeah, and it's so yeah. I mean, it's it's certainly, like I said, there's certainly a lot of reasons for it, but I'm just wondering, at some point I'm going to do an episode, I think, on attendance and then that sort of thing, and just look at, you know, interest and the team and ratings and all those sorts of issues. One thing that I've, just in the course of doing this podcast, that I think is somewhat encouraging, at least for me, is that just the pure number of, I mean, you work for, you know, Utah Street Report, which is an excellent Orioles blog, and there's several other good, you know, good to very good Orioles blogs out there. There's other Orioles podcasts. I'm doing this one now. There's a lot of resources for fans, I guess is the way to put it, and a lot of really well-done resources for fans out there, which show, I think, a level of interest that maybe attendance doesn't capture. So that's encouraging to me, at least.
Yeah, and part of that is just the new age that we're kind of in with media. You know, there's more opportunities to meet other fans. I mean, I know I've met fans simply through blogging and through Twitter and through Facebook groups, and I've met them before at games and hung out with them and watched a game and drank a beer with them. And so there's definitely, just in terms of interest and awareness of what's going on in this whole fan community. And that's kind of what we at Utah Street like to kind of promote too, is that we're just a bunch of fans, you know, in the end, writing and blogging about this team and this organization and what we love about it. You know, there's definitely more opportunities and, you know, attendance doesn't really capture that. There's way more attention being paid to this team and way more opportunities to express your fandom or your displeasure for that matter with this team, through a number of different outlets now, like you said, podcasts like this one. And there are many others. So attendance doesn't really capture how much interest there is and how much love there is for the Orioles.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. And I too, like I said, you mentioned you've met a lot of people through the, you know, digital media world. And I think with maybe one or two exceptions, I think every guest I've had on this podcast so far is somebody that I, you know, either, you know, sort of met, you know, quote unquote, through Twitter, through Twitter, basically, yeah. You know, and through the
absolutely.
Blogs. And that's just something that wouldn't have been possible even 10 years ago. Like this wasn't
right.
Possible.
No, you're 100% right. I'm in the same boat. Some of them are now in my fantasy baseball leagues that I run, and it's a great way to meet people and to kind of expand the community, without even having to really attend the games all that often. Like you said, I get to attend probably a couple games a year. I try to get back to Baltimore and do that, and I try to go see them on the road when I can, but I don't get to a ton of games, not nearly as many as I'd like to, but you still feel a part of it when you're able to use social media and use other outlets in order to communicate with fans.
All right, well, speaking of that, tell people where they can find you on Twitter.
Sure, on Twitter I can be found at astetka. It's A-S-T-E-T-K-A. And then I blog every Thursday morning over at utahstreetreport.com. I write a column called Thursday Thoughts. It's kind of just a few things bouncing around in my brain about this team and about what's going on. Sometimes I even broaden it out to something that may be going on elsewhere in baseball. I watch more baseball than is probably healthy. I watch all the teams. I sit back every night and flip around to games and pay attention to a lot of different stuff. So I get a little more of a national perspective than some just specific Oriole fans may. And then every Monday morning, I'm writing a kind of a more center-focused blog over at massandsports.com, which is where you found the piece on Machado and Beckham and the position switch this past week. That can be found, like I said, every Monday morning over at massandsports.com.
All right. Well, Andrew, thanks so much for being with us today, and I hope you'll come back on.
Anytime, Jess.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.